On April 16, 1931, a train carrying the former King of Spain, Alfonso XIII, pulled into a train station in Paris, France. 4 days earlier, the municipal elections in Spain had sent a clear message to the king that in the areas where it mattered most, that is, the cities, the citizens overwhelmingly favored a republican form of government instead of a monarchy. In other words, they sort of democratically invited him to leave. And 2 days after that, Alfonso went into self-exile. It is generally said that he abdicated the throne, but that was both technically and officially untrue. He never did, and he clearly had left the door open for a possible return, a return which would never happen. In any event, the story goes that when the former king, so unpopular in Spain, reached his destination, he saw to his amazement that the citizens of Paris had turned out in droves to give him a kind of hero's welcome. As he stepped off the train, thousands of people gathering at the station started shouting in unison, "Long live the king!" The crowds apparently became so overenthusiastic that the physical well-being of both the monarch and his bodyguards were at risk. They were nearly crushed, but they managed to escape from the station and made their way to the hotel, where they would reunite with his family. They would get a similar reception upon their arrival in England. Now, what was going on here? Well, let me tell you what. We are talking about an extraordinary story of humanitarianism that is as moving as it is unknown. And yet it really happened, and it deserves to get more attention. And that's the purpose of our podcast today. And to understand just what was going on, we have to rewind a few years to the First World War, a war in which Spain seemingly kept a low profile. You see, after soaring sky high and becoming the world's first global power in the 1500s, Spain was involved in nearly every conceivable European war that took place ever since, or at least practically. Sometimes victorious, and sometimes defeated. So you might be surprised to learn that in the two biggest European wars of all time, World War I and World War II, Spain remained a neutral country like Switzerland, or at least it didn't actively participate in warfare. World War II has a logical explanation because the country had just ended a devastating civil war months before Germany invaded Poland, and was in no shape to get involved in more hostilities. Not getting involved was a good thing for General Franco, who was going to need all the help he could get to stay in power, and staying out of the war was his way of buying time. That didn't mean that Spain was completely uninvolved. Franco became a fairly skilled fair-weather fan, edging towards Germany in the first couple of years when things were going Hitler's way, then slowly but surely switching over to the Allied side when the tide turned. It's a terrific story, but destined for another day. During World War I, however, the situation was somewhat different. Spain had no alliances with either side and stayed on the sidelines for a number of reasons. To begin with, it was a former world power infamously known for being on its last leg as an empire. It was also desperately under-industrialized and ill-equipped for such an undertaking. Recent military disasters against the United States and Morocco seemed to confirm it was a mere shadow of its former self. Then you had issues with the domestic situation, which was so tumultuous, so unstable, it seemed unlikely the government would get any support from anyone. On a personal level, the Spanish king and queen had close relatives on both sides, which I guess would have made it an awkward situation at family reunions. And finally, there seemed little Spain could gain by getting involved, so it just didn't. It did, however, provide assistance in a surprising fashion. And not so much on an official level, but rather a personal one, a royal but personal one. Spain played a humanitarian role which is little known to many, especially the Spaniards, and yet was greatly appreciated by those who were on the receiving end. This is the story of how Alfonso XIII became one of the most beloved figures in Europe. Alfonso, the great-grandfather of the current King Felipe VI, has always been a somewhat controversial figure, and for a lot of reasons. This was due in part because he was king during some of Spain's most turbulent times, meaning he rarely acted in a way that pleased everyone. He left a legacy that is both great and flawed at the same time. His story is unbelievable. There's just so much to talk about. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Be that what it may, there is no doubt that during the Great War, he revealed some of his finest qualities as a human being. Apparently, the story goes that Alfonso received a personal letter from a French washerwoman who had unsuccessfully tried to locate her husband who was missing in action in Belgium. Alfonso instructed his ambassadors to try and track the man down, and lo and behold, it worked. The man was in a prisoner of war camp in Germany. And though it wasn't a go straight home pass, at least the woman could rest assured that he hadn't been killed. He also sent her some money. The news became a hot story in both the French and German press, spurring others to write the king with similar requests. At first, the king and his personal secretary took on the task themselves, but as the workload increased, reaching as high as 20,000 letters a month, it soon became apparent that they needed to take on more staff. So, an office was set up to handle the onslaught of correspondence. With the help of a staff of about 50 people, they devised an incredibly efficient system of color-coded files cataloged by country, requests, outcome, and other details. It was known originally as the Pro-Captive Office, and eventually became known as the European War Office. This was no makeshift organization intent on helping a few desperate individuals. It bloomed into a full-fledged bona fide NGO, quite possibly the first of its kind in Spain. The services provided were broken down into the following sections: prisoners, missing people, information and correspondence in occupied territories, repatriations of severely wounded or sick soldiers, pardons, commutations of sentences, repatriations of civilians, internment service in Switzerland, remittance of funds to individuals and families in occupied territories, and reports on inspection visits by Spanish delegates. The office located thousands of missing soldiers, successfully prevented or commuted at least 72 capital punishments, obtained more than 5,000 repatriations of severely wounded soldiers, 25,000 reports of families caught in occupied territories, and over 250,000 investigations into the status of missing soldiers. Among the well-known prisoners found or repatriated were the famous ballet dancer Nijinsky, the French actor Maurice Chevalier, the Polish pianist Arthur Rubinstein, and a young Charles de Gaulle. The Italian opera composer Puccini also wrote to ask for assistance in discovering the whereabouts of a relative. While that is interesting, it is the everyday letters that seem to have moved people the most. One of the most endearing letters came from an 8-year-old French girl named Sylviane Sartor, who sent a letter to the king asking him to help her uncle, a prisoner of war. She said that he was starving to death and wouldn't last much longer, and that her mother, his sister, was crying all the time. If the king could do something about it, they would be very grateful. The king himself replied, tenderly asking for more information. The short letter went, "Dear Miss, I will do my best to stop your mother from crying, so be so good as to send me exact news of your uncle so that I can take the matter further. Alfonso XIII, King." The prisoner was found in a camp in Hanover, Germany, and eventually sent back to Switzerland with his family. One of the king's most crowning achievements, if you'll excuse the pun, was to create a compromise between both sides of the war to prevent the further sinking of hospital ships. Regrettably, despite an agreement, they were fair game up until then. To ensure that the hospital ships were being used for their intended purpose and not for military reasons, Spanish officers were allowed to check these vessels both at the beginning and end of the voyages. That measure satisfied everyone. Other goodwill missions were less successful, like Alfonso's attempt to save the Tsar's family. Unfortunately, they had already been assassinated by then, but no one knew about it. Overall, it is said that as many as 200,000 letters reached the palace, and that every single one received a reply, many times by the king himself. The king also paid for the expenses himself, not with state money, which totaled somewhere in the neighborhood of some 6 million euros. Money, food, and other provisions were also sent to some of the families who wrote. So impressed were people by the monarch's good deeds that he was nominated not once, but twice for a Nobel Peace Prize, and was the only monarch in history to receive such an honor. Unfortunately, it was never awarded to him. Another example of the extent to which the king touched the hearts of those who lived far away is the bedtime prayer an English child thought up one time. It went like this: "And God bless father and mother and nurse, and send father back soon from his horrid prison in Germany. And God bless specially the dear king of Spain, who found out about father. Amen." He was known abroad as the Angel of Mercy and the Royal Knight of Charity, and yet back home these achievements went largely ignored. I talked to friends in Spain, many of whom are well-versed in Spanish history, and you'd be surprised how few know anything about this. It's really puzzling. Alfonso XIII was no saint. Many could attest to that. He had countless lovers, numerous illegitimate children, is reported to have commissioned pornographic films to be made for him, and that's just on sort of the personal side. Politically, he struggled to keep the country united and even sat back as a dictator took over. On the other hand, he oversaw a major shift towards progress for Spain in many sectors: industry, infrastructure, education, science, and technology. This period is sometimes referred to as the Silver Age or the Second Golden Age, the first being around 1600. And if the story of the European War Office is anything to go by, he must have also had a very decent, efficient, and human side to him. Yet, no, hardly a word gets out there, and there's certainly a story to tell. A story about a complex man in a complex time, a horrible time during one of the most tragic and impersonal wars of all time. And yet, just as people were losing their faith in humanity, here came Alfonso to restore it through his great humanitarianism. And that will be all for today. Hope you've enjoyed today's podcast by Brian Spaindomain. Please feel free to leave us any comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Amazon, Apple, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spaindomain, click on our PayPal donate button. Or if you wish to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts, you can check us out at Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.